Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk by Lama Kathy Wesley is entitled, Belief or Disbelief? Do we have to believe all facets of Buddhist teaching before we can commit ourselves to a contemplative path? Lama Kathy explains how we can relax a bit and not feel pressured about belief, or disbelief for that matter, and allow meditation to fill our need for self-knowledge first. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you for coming out. I know that I had the impulse when I first awakened this morning. It was one of those I need to go back to sleep for a little while longer mornings. And so maybe you experienced this also. So I'm really glad that that you broke through and were able to join us this morning. If any of you are first-time visitors, thank you very much for coming. I hope that that what we're going to do in the next little while will be of nourishment for you. Yeah, sorry to all the people who just came from the tea room. Sorry I snuck in. There actually is a secret way to get from the front of the building to this room through all the classrooms, but we're not allowed to do it when the children are here. But to save time, I did that this morning, so that's how I snuck in. So sorry about that. I do have some news, and so last week when I had news to share, I waited a little too long to share it. So hopefully I will not make that mistake today. I'll try to conclude my remarks by about a quarter after the hour, so that I can share the news with you. The headline is that Lama Karma called me last night, and they're going to try to have the. I just do not know how to use this thing. They're going to try to have the blessing ceremony for our land in April. And it's a very, yeah, I know, it's a very short time frame. I'm going to need to gather people together to help us put on an extremely complicated program in a very short period of time. In any case, one of the things I'd like to discuss today is our very human tendencies and how we can begin to work with our very human tendencies. And after that, I'd like to open things up for discussion so that we can come up with strategies for working with our minds. And so the first thing I'd like to do is to begin with a short prayer, which is something that that Buddhists do. We start with a prayer of taking refuge and engendering the bodhisattva motivation, making the aspiration that through this practice, we will be able to accomplish awakening for the benefit of all beings. So I'm going to recite the short four-line refuge prayer that's at the beginning of our Chenrezig chant. I'm going to recite that first, and then and I'll just be reciting it one time for brevity's sake. So if it's a prayer you're familiar with, you can join in, but if it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, if you're unfamiliar with the prayer, just join in your heart and in your mind and make the aspiration that you dedicate this time period to the benefit of all sentient beings. Oh, Sanje Chudan Sochi Chonamla Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Da Ji Jin So Ji Be Su Nam Gi Drola Pinshi Sanjay Drupasho. O Palin Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chiwar Pede Denshala Kadrin Jembo Gone Jason Te Kusum Tugging a Trip Sal to So. Okay, thank you. So today, the topic is belief versus disbelief, and how this helps us and causes us a challenge as we study and practice the Dharma. A long time ago, when I first started practicing under the direction of Kenpo Carter Rinpoche, the whole idea of Buddhism was somewhat foreign to me. I had studied some Buddhist philosophy through the Zen tradition by reading the books of Alan Watts, who was a popular scholar in those days. And I had studied a little bit about Hinduism. Through studying the popular books of Ram Dass, the American who went to India and took a Hindu Swami as his guru. And so I had done a little bit of reading on both of these topics, but not really enough to understand it. And it wasn't too long after having read some of these books and not really been able to connect with the philosophy or the belief system of Buddhism or Hinduism, I hadn't really been able to connect to this. And then Kenpo Carter Rinpoche came into our lives here in Columbus. A young couple had met the 16th Karmapa and had said to him, could you please send us a Lama? We would like to have a Tibetan teacher come and teach us in Columbus. And so His Holiness the 16th Karmapa chose Kenpo Carter Rinpoche to visit Columbus, and he visited here in September of 1977, and that's when I met him. And he was working with an English language translator because even though he is now at an advanced age, Kenpo Carter Rinpoche never learned to speak English. He can understand some English words, but he was mainly needing the use of a translator or an interpreter in order to communicate with us. And so the very first translator we encountered was Mudrup Sering Burkhar, who went on to translate for the 17th Karmapa. He had translated for the 16th and went on to translate for the 17th Karmapa. He was quite good. And so this is how I connected with Buddhism for the first time, was through a lama who was being interpreted by someone whose language I couldn't understand. So you can imagine that I was feeling both like the wish to believe in what was being taught to me and a little American-style skepticism as to whether this was for real or not. And so for me, the first time I felt at ease was in one of the first lectures that Kenpo Rinpoche gave here in Columbus, where he borrowed a phrase that I later heard elsewhere to talk about the concept of belief. He said, "I know that some of the things I'm telling you are not things that you can instantly believe." He said, "That's okay. You don't have to. In fact," he said, "I think you should take what you need and leave the rest." Which is really, really interesting, because it was many years later that I encountered the philosophies of the 12-step recovery program that is explained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is what they say also. That is a saying of the recovery community: take what you need and leave the rest. So I felt at home right away, because Kenpo Rinpoche was not requiring me or anybody else to believe anything. but he was inviting us to consider some ideas. The ideas were a little bit difficult to grasp. For example, how could we possibly become a Buddha? How is that possible? Wasn't the Buddha some kind of Superman who lived 2,500 years ago and had unique circumstances? How could I possibly have Buddha potential within me? So that was the first thing I had a little bit of trouble believing in. I had some belief that a Buddha lived in the past and that that Buddha really did accomplish some type of spiritual accomplishment. I could have some confidence about that. The teachings are there. Many people have followed them, used them, benefited from them. But somehow I still felt distant. I still felt distant from that philosophy and so forth. So I had difficulty believing in the teachings, specifically the teachings that clashed with what I had previously come to understand through my training as a young Christian. I had been taught that the world was created by a supreme being who reigned over that world and that had sent his son to redeem our sins. That was the philosophy that I had grown up with in Christianity. So hearing a different philosophy where there were no commandments given by a supreme being, but rather precepts given by a wise person about what causes suffering and about what causes happiness, I had some glimmering of belief because they were similar. Don't harm beings. I like that. That sounds good. Don't harm beings. And then practice virtue. Well, I don't know what virtue is, but I think I'd like to try that. And tame your mind through the practice of meditation. Okay, now that I could really get on board with. After all, meditation had been recommended to me as a way of working with my anxiety and my worries. So those were the three main things that I was able to work with, the three main beliefs, if you will. Do no harm, practice virtue, and tame your mind. I was able to take hold of and believe in those. The whole concept of karma kind of confused me. I mean, I get the idea of not harming beings because harming others kind of harms me. It turns me into something that I don't want to become. I can kind of get that idea of karma. But that whole idea of one lifetime to the next lifetime and to the next lifetime, the whole idea of rebirth, I'm not so sure I'm on board with that. That was how I felt. But what was good about the surroundings that Kempo Carter Rinpoche provided for us was that phrase, take what you need and leave the rest. He essentially said, if you don't believe in karma, you may have some problems. And if you don't believe in rebirth, you may have some problems, but just keep meditating. Don't worry about that. Once again, no judgment. Just keep practicing. And so alongside this belief system, I met people. I met people who said, I got to understand everything there is to understand about this philosophy. After all, I've been fooled before. I actually met people who felt that way. They didn't want to be embarrassed at following a path that wasn't genuine. I get that. They were concerned about what their family or friends might think about them, that maybe they were following some kind of weird cult. And that, you know, it was going to turn them into some kind of zombie. I mean, after all, meditation, you know, it you do kind of like, you just kind of sit there and you don't do anything. You're not being a productive member of society. You're just sitting there. Okay, what are you doing? So one's parents or relatives or friends might have some doubts about the purpose of meditation and the benefits of meditation, but we who do it know the benefits, even if sometimes our meditation is a struggle. where we have to just keep bringing our monkey mind, which is busy, 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 back to the object of meditation over and over and over again. This provides a certain relief from the chatter of the thoughts, and that is something we can believe in. We don't need to believe a philosophy to know that our minds are more calm when we can practice meditation. The whole rebirth thing, we can kind of be agnostic on that. The whole karma thing, as one of my Dharma friends told me once, it's okay to be agnostic on karma, but you probably should respect it anyhow. It's kind of like a person being agnostic about gravity until they're standing on a height and they're looking down without a railing. They're not sure if they want to trust gravity or not. But the fact of the matter is that we do have to trust gravity. It does work. And we do have to trust our minds, because our minds are how we experience the world. Now, we can't necessarily trust all the advice given to us by our minds, because there's a monkey sitting in the driver's seat for us most of the time saying, hey, let's go here. Let's do this. So that's kind of where our trust issues come into play. It's really funny how much easier it is for people to believe in the monkey and what the monkey tells them. Like, oh, hey, let's go over here. This should be fun. Or let's do this or let's do that. But when they think, you know, your actions could have consequences. Really? We might question that. But the fact of the matter is, if we think about the teachings on karma, if we think at least on the teachings on karma, these are things we might be able to believe in. We might be able to believe that actions, thoughts, and words have consequences. And those consequences may not be what we think they'll be. For example, if we get angry with someone and think, well, I'm putting that person in their place, we might think that that was a really good idea. But the way we did it may have been so personally damaging that the person who was put in their place now feels a resentment against the person who put them there. So how we do things determines a lot about how those things we do impact us. If we use harsh words, if we use harsh language, if we belittle someone or make them feel bad about themselves, that actually hurts us too. And so it takes a while for us to kind of get this belief in understanding this type of karma. But if we demonstrate it to ourselves enough, we will begin to believe it and begin to change our actions as a result of this belief. So there are a lot of beliefs in Buddhism that are easier to accept, such as action, cause, and result, or the truth of karma. But it's the life-to-life thing that really, really causes a lot of belief problems, because they're twofold. Number one, if we believe that we were never created by anyone, then that means we will never go out of existence. And if we were never created by anyone, that means that we have an infinite number of lives ahead of us, but also infinite lives behind us in the past. So that's a little harder to accept. So maybe we're not going to believe that today. But what we might believe is that from the moment we became aware in this life, at whatever age that was, whether we were babies or whether we were toddlers or school children, at whatever age we became aware of being in this life, from that moment, nothing has stayed the same. We've always been changing, always, from moment to moment, year to year. And you could almost say that we have engaged in rebirth of a sort while being alive in this current life. When we were toddlers, we couldn't walk. When we were babies, we couldn't walk, but we never stopped trying. And eventually we were able to walk. And when we were toddlers, we weren't able to talk, but we eventually learned how to talk. And we eventually learned and learned and learned and learned and became teenagers and had all those interesting life experiences and then became young adults and then so forth and so on. You could say we have had many lives while we are still in this life that we're in right now. So as one very wise old Dharma friend said to me one time, she said, "I know you have trouble believing in past and future lives," but she said, "look at it this way. You've already had a past and future life right now." She said, "that little baby who you were, did she die?" "No, she just changed." "And did that little toddler die?" "No, she just changed." "And so at the end of this life, will you die or will you just change?" And I said, "ooh, that's deep." This person, by the way, was anybody who is an old timer will know Bernice Page, who used to live at KTD Monastery. She was one of their Kempo Karta Rinpoche's first Dharma students. She and I had the same refuge name, Gyurme Chutso, Changeless Ocean of Dharma. And I think that she was actually his very first Dharma student in America. And so that was actually an incredibly wise thing that she was able to share with me about how she was able to embrace the belief in past and future lives by entertaining the notion of them through believing in the past and future lives of the current life we are in right now. But still, even with that kind of discussion, many people will still disbelieve it, and that's actually okay. Nobody's going to require you to believe that. And you can still be agnostic about it and still practice meditation, doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming your mind. Those were the three things the Buddha actually taught. And so there's another thing that people have difficulty believing, and that is in the existence of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They have a hard time believing they really exist. Aren't all of those pictures just ideas? And so that's another difficulty we have in believing that there are or were in the past Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and that they actually play a role in our lives even now. Kempo Karta Rinpoche, he's a bit of an iconoclast about this. He likes to poke holes in people sometimes who intellectualize Dharma. He likes to kind of poke holes in them and remind them that there's actually experience beneath their intellectual frameworks. Because aren't all of our beliefs intellectual frameworks of a sort? All of our beliefs are intellectual frameworks that we use to help us understand ourselves, our world, and our future. We can use our intellectual frameworks to explain things that happened to us in the past, that are happening to us now, and will happen to us in the future. So we can use these as frameworks. But sometimes the frameworks become more important than they need to be. And then we find ourselves criticizing others and judging others based on our framework. And so they can be problematic. So beliefs can be problematic. Even beliefs that we come to in a sort of proper way of reasoning, they can still cause us problems. And so, from a Buddhist point of view, the idea of Buddhas is a natural outgrowth of the Buddha's teaching that every single person has the potential to become a Buddha because every being has a mind, and that mind has the same characteristic or nature no matter who you are. Your mind is not established as a material thing. There's not a package somewhere inside you that says, "my mind," and that's your mind. It's actually diffuse and throughout the body. And it is joined to the body in what the Tibetans call a special relationship. And the body and the mind come together when one is conceived and gestating in the womb, And it comes apart, the mind and the body special relationship comes apart at the time of death. And that the mind leaves the body and behind as a husk, as it were, and then moves on to a different experience based on one's karmic accumulations. That's the belief system of rebirth. Now, not everybody believes this, and it's okay. Again, you can just believe in the rebirth in this life, and that will be sufficient. Why is that sufficient? Because if we believe that we are continuously evolving, that means we could evolve into a Buddha. It's possible. It's something we could do. The Buddhas of the past have just succeeded at doing it. We have the idea to do it. They actually did it. We don't understand what the transcendence nature of Buddhas are. We don't know what Buddhas are and what their experience is and how they experience their mind and how that's different from how we experience our minds. So because it's something we're not familiar with, we're maybe not inclined to believe it, that they have a unique experience and that after death, they go on to a different set of experiences than we do. But if you look at Buddhahood as being the word for enlightenment in Tibetan is jang chup. Jang, J-A-N-G, means completely purified, and chup means completely ripened. It's very similar to the meaning of the word Buddha, sanjay, same meaning, purified and ripened. So that means that any being who completely purifies all of their confusion and completely brings to fruition all of their inner qualities is a Buddha. And they have a different experience in life because they don't have the same confusion about things that we have. We don't. As one great teacher said to me, we have all these veils covering our Buddha nature. And because of these veils, we don't see that we have that Buddha potential. So hearing about the Buddha potential is the best way to start. Hearing that you have a potential that could be unearthed is, for many people, their initial leap of faith, as it were, in Buddhism. The final leap of faith in that way is to believe that there are beings who have accomplished this and that they actually have the capability of benefiting beings both now and in the future, and that they will never fall back into confusion ever again. That is what we are encouraged to believe about enlightened beings, that their enlightenment is forever, and that they can't fall back. I think that's a good thing. We would very much like to have that. And so as a result, we apply ourselves to doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming the mind. So belief, then, is a way of stretching ourselves beyond what we think we're capable of. If someone tells us we have Buddha nature, at first we may be skeptical, because skepticism keeps us kind of safe and enclosed in our frameworks. But to be able to break out of that, sometimes we need some evidence. And that's why many people are encouraged when they see stories about children who remember previous lives. Because children are so close to the previous life, they do sometimes have memories of them. And that gives us an idea that maybe those teachings are true. But in my thinking, the best way to prove the continuous nature of mind is to meditate. Because if we meditate, we will see that from the beginning of a meditation session to an end, our mind doesn't die. It just goes through a series of lifetimes. First, I'm worried about work. Then I'm worried about something at home. Then a bell goes off and I think I got to answer something. So our minds are always being drawn in many, many different directions, but there's a continuity of awareness that underlies all of that. And if we can rest with and be with that continuity of awareness all the way through our meditation, we might actually entertain the notion that our minds have no beginning and have no end. Now that's interesting. if someone were to tell you right now, close your eyes and see if you can find the beginning of your mind. Found it yet? No. It's like one of those horribly frustrating balls of yarn. You can't find the beginning, no matter what. And that's because there isn't one. And if you were told, close your eyes and look for the end of your mind, it's kind of like looking for the end of the internet. It's an idea, but it doesn't really exist. You can't find it. And so in the final analysis, Buddhist belief is just a framework. The idea of past and future lives is a framework. If we can use it in order to provide guidance for us to not harm ourselves and not harm others, and to take care of ourselves and benefit others, and as a framework for giving us confidence that when we meditate, we will begin to experience our minds and see how they work. This is all we need. We can take what we need, which is the practice of meditation, and leave the rest, the whole belief system. We can kind of take what we need and leave the rest until such time as our experience in meditation allows us to entertain the notion of the truth of these things. The best way to see that our mind is unborn and undying is to try to look for the beginning and end of it when we meditate. Don't spend your whole meditation session doing this, but at the very end, just take a moment and try to find it. And when you don't find it, just take a break. You can stop looking. You didn't find it. You don't have to keep looking. Just rest. And that moment of quiet that you rest in is real. You don't have to believe in it. It's there. You're experiencing it right now. And Kemp Rinpoche said to me once, I said, what's it been like teaching people in the West? He says, it's interesting because he said a lot of Western people have a great education in the physical sciences. They're very educated. And so they are skeptical about everything. He said, I will say one thing. He said, when they meditate, they do experience their mind differently, and that gives them confidence that the teachings of the Buddha have something to tell them. And he said, that's why I think it's important that you teach all students how to at least do a little bit of meditation, because he said that will help them. And so, no pressure, but meditation would be a good idea. If you could add it to your daily life, that would be like super neat. And if you find things about the Dharma as you read, and you say, I'm not sure I believe that, write them down. And then bring them, and then we'll discuss them. And if I can't help you find a way of working with those questions, then I'll introduce you to lamas who can. And that's kind of my way of doing it. When I was a kid, I went to Catholic school, and anybody who's been to Catholic school knows about Catholic school religion class. We're a rowdy bunch, because if we get a priest or a nun in front of us, we'll ask them question after question after question that are really, really weird. You know, is it a sin if you do this, but then you do that? And it's like, yes, it's still a sin. You know, and we always try to figure out a way to finagle our way around sin. Like, you know, could we like not sin? Could we like do bad stuff and it's still not a sin? I love kids. They're always trying to get the inside story on what they can get away with. But I wanted to talk a little bit about belief and disbelief today for this reason, is that I still want everyone to remember what Rinpoche said, take what you need and leave the rest. If there's part of it that you just don't resonate with, just set it aside. You don't need to believe it. It's not required. Nobody's going to give you a test and say this or that. There are, there's a lovely article you can look up online called Buddhism in a nutshell, and it talks about the four core beliefs of Buddhists. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to remember them all from memory, but one is that all things are interdependent and impermanent, and all emotions are painful. Nirvana is peace, and I've forgotten the last one. I think all things are composite. Now I'm going to have to go look them up. I'll look them up during the Q&A, and then I'll read them to you at the end so that you can know we got it right. Was I close? Okay, I'll look them up. All beings have potential to become Buddhists. That's a good one too. But there are four core beliefs. And so there was a Buddhist scholar, an American Buddhist scholar, who said, look, don't let your skepticism get in the way of you reading about things that are going to be nourishing for you spiritually. Because some people are so afraid of making a mistake with their belief that they will disbelieve everything. Or, like a friend of mine will say, I'm not going to practice any of this until I am sure that all of it's 100% real and 100% genuine and I can believe in all of it. And interestingly enough, that person then found himself sitting in front of none other than Jaltsup Rinpoche, one of the great masters of our tradition, who actually came to the United States in the 1980s and taught in Granville and here in Columbus. And in a small family home gathering in Granville, Jaltsup Rinpoche said in an audience in where this man was sitting, he said specifically, you don't have to wait until you can believe in everything in Buddhism in order to practice meditation. Meditation is something human beings can do. So why would you wait? It's something you can do to release your fixation. Why would you wait? He says, if you wait until you believe everything, he said, you may die before you even practice meditation the first time because you may never get satisfaction. So he said, no point in waiting. Anyway, this Buddhist scholar said, when you read Dharma books, he said, you should keep two baskets in your mind and then file away the questions you have in one of these two baskets. He said, the first basket is the I don't get it basket, which is the I don't understand that. I'm reading it, but I don't understand that principle. I don't understand that at all. That's the I don't get it basket. Then he said, second basket is, I get it, but I don't know. It's the I don't know basket, where I understand it, but I'm not sure I believe that. So he said, if you use these two baskets in your mind, he said, this will work because that way you will put nothing in the trash, which I think is kind of nice. He said, that way, that's a great way to take what you need and leave the rest. So I did promise that I would end early today so I could give you the news from Lama Karma. So if you have questions about things you believe in or disbelieve in, I'll start writing them down. And if I can't help you in the next 10 minutes of questions, we'll get one of the lamas to answer when they get here. Because they're coming. That's the last part of my talk today. Anybody have a question? If so, we have a question microphone. Alternative is to sit and meditate. Got a question? All right. Yeah, I'd say go for it. If you got a question, I'd say go for it.
My question is on the mind. So you can't really perceive a beginning or an end of our mind. But what keeps us our minds isolated? Why don't we just have like a mind meld like with everybody else's mind?
Right. I don't know the answer to this one as to why we are not part of one big mind, but I did ask a Buddhist scholar about this, Kempa Urgen Tenzin, who is going to get here eventually. He's just been very busy this year and hasn't been able to get here. But the Buddha's teaching was that he didn't necessarily give the why, but we'll have to look into that as to the why. But he did give the teaching that we are all discrete minds and that we are all separate from one another. And he said the proof of this is the Buddha himself. Because he said, if the Buddha got enlightened and we were all part of one big mind, he said that when the Buddha got enlightened, we all would have gotten enlightened. But the fact of the matter is, we are all completely separate. The why I'm going to have to ask somebody who's up the chain from me, the intellectual and enlightenment chain from me. But what they do say is that we all are separate and discrete from one another. But what's very interesting is that when we attain Buddhahood, and we're all aware of one another, but some people are, because of their karma, a little more sensitive to understanding and helping others than others people are. Some people are very self-contained, but others have some experience of understanding the minds of others, either through their intellectual or their emotional experience. They can feel some compassion or empathy for other people quickly, as opposed to other people who don't feel that way. But we'd have to ask as to why we are discrete. I don't know the why. I just know that.
I guess my thinking was that somehow our karma causes us to build up walls for protection. We become an isolated individual.
I do think that there is something to that, but because I don't want to speculate on the answer, I can't say yes or no to that example. But I do think we do experience life that way, don't we? Because many people who are sensitive fear contamination by other people's emotions. They don't want to be close to other people who are experiencing emotions because it brings their emotions to the surface, and that scares them because they feel out of control. Because a lot of people feel that control is like the best. I think it's because it's our sort of misguided but sincere wish not to die. It's our misguided but sincere fear of non-existence. And that when we lose control, it feels like non-existence, like we don't exist. And that's really kind of interesting, isn't it? So I wish I could help you, but I can't go farther than that. Yeah. If you have a comment, could you go to the mic? Yeah.
I was just going to say that when I was here and talking to Lama Karma, I asked him like roughly the same
question. Oh, good. Then you can come and give the answer. Would you want, James, you want to go first and then let Chris talk? Because he got the answer, apparently, so sort of an answer. Okay.
The question about the mind and I believe it's the subtle body versus the physical. Since the subtle body's that's not limited by the physical in the same way. Does that mean the mind exists not just in the body but also in the extension of the karma?
Here's my best answer for that. We would need to ask this question again up the chain. But my best understanding of this is that our karma produces every aspect of our current being. So, in other words, we are, what the Tibetans say about the physical body we have, which by extension would also go to our non-physical body. Some people call it the energy body, some people call it the psychic body. But no matter what it is, one person compared it to hardware versus software, which I think is a really interesting comparison. But all of that is produced by our karma. This body is called the fully ripened result of all previous karma.
All right. But would that include consequences and things like that? As in, you're cause and effect?
I don't know what you mean by you are cause and effect. No, I'm
as in your cause and effect plus the physical are both part of the ripening.
Yes, in fact, if you go and read Trungpa Rinpoche's book, Trolloc Rinpoche's book on karma, that he wrote a really fantastic book called Karma, What It Is, What It Isn't, and Why It Matters. He talks about these things in detail, but unfortunately, I can't remember everything about the book. But there are several types of karma. There's the karma that produces this body and mind, and there's also the karma that is produced by conditioning. But how they interplay, I don't feel ready to say. I don't know. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Okay, and then Chris, you're going to be the last comment today, and then we'll go on to the news. Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully I can kind of shed some light on what you were asking, but this is you know, the question I asked and sort of the answer I got when I was asking about sort of the difference between the nature of mind and mind, with the nature of mind being emptiness, right? The nature of all phenomena. Whereas mind is itself a phenomenon, like that basal condition that underlies a mind, that state of emptiness, is not the same as the mind that realizes emptiness. So kind of my understanding as to why we aren't just part of a big universal mind is that that sort of big universal mind would be essentially that concept of emptiness, which is of course non-conceptual, but that the mind that realizes it is that sort of thing at the relative level that we're working with. Mm-hmm. So a mind is itself a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. That was my understanding. Perhaps you can weigh in.
Yeah. I won't be able to help much because I sent him to Lama Karma because I couldn't answer the question. So we will keep working on this. I think that, you know what I mean? I think we'll keep working on it until we have a clear understanding of the meaning of the whole thing, because I think there's some value in it. There really is some value in digging in to this understanding, because the difference between belief and disbelief in many cases is understanding. If we can grasp it intellectually, it is easier to say, yes, that's true for me. Does that make sense? And so sometimes our intellect stands in the way of our ability to practice because of disbelief, or because we feel that we're superior to others because we believe something that is different from what other people believe. And belief as a cause for superiority is problematic, because a lot of religions have gotten into trouble because they feel their system is superior to others and so forth and so on. Even within religions, some systems will say, oh, our belief in Christianity is better than that belief in Christianity. Our belief in Buddhism is better than that belief. You know, so the human beings, we can kind of mess everything up in just about any way possible. And so we can even use believe and disbelieve. But I'm getting closer and closer through your questions. Even the questions I can't answer, we're all getting closer and closer to understanding what mind is. For me, the idea of explaining mind as something that has the capacity, that something that is without color, shape, location, beginning, or end, yet is the source of all experience. This dichotomy, and it's not the right word, but this paradox of something that is not a material thing, but is not nothing because it experiences, that's interesting to me. And that through understanding that interplay, that we can actually allow our mind just to rest, because that's the point of all of this, is creating a situation or an atmosphere where we can just experience, just be, without worry, without anxiety, without anything, just be, and let mind experience itself, which is something we're mostly too confused or frightened to do. And so this is where we can use our belief to help us say, meditation is okay, we won't lose our minds. So anyway, thank you for the questions. I have we're just going to keep looking. We're not going to quit. Lama Karma will be here soon, so we can go over it with him again. And Kempo Tenkyong will be here. And so this is going to be very interesting. I'm just going to tell you about last night. This is the news. Last night, Lama Karma called me at 8:30, and he said, hi, Lama Kathy, I'm here with Kempo Karta Rinpoche today because he's doing a ceremony at the 3-year retreat center. And I had a chance to talk to him about when we're going to bless the land for your new center. And I said, I'm all ears. And he said, if you're able to start the building this spring, that means you probably should get the land blessed before you start digging in it, because that's the way we do things. We try to please all of the unseen beings, and we're kind of, the Tibetans are kind of like the Native Americans in that they believe there's all kinds of unseen energies, and it's good to have harmony among all of those energies when you're getting ready to do something. It's kind of like a energetic or spiritual feng shui, if you want to say, to bring harmony to everything. So we have to do a lot of ceremonies. And I said, okay, fine. And he said, when I looked at everybody's schedule, they're all traveling a lot and they're really busy over the next couple of months. So he said, how about 2 weeks from tomorrow, April the 7th? And I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, he said, that's the best. It's the only time we can get the right number of lamas together and get here. And I said, okay, we'll try. And so what I'm doing is I'm allowing the Columbus Division of Fire to make our decision for us. Now, you may say, why is that? It's because part of this offering is a small bonfire. A small bonfire that, according to the Division of Fire's regulations, has to be contained in a vessel with a cover so that nothing accidentally catches fire, which would be super embarrassing for us. As many people will know that our building was destroyed by fire, we didn't do that. Somebody else did. It was an arson situation. But it would be super embarrassing if we had a fire that caught brush fire or something. Anyhow, long story short, we have to do everything the way they want. But one of the things they require, even for ceremonial fires, which is there's actually a place on the permit form that the Division of Fire has, you have to file a request for an open burning permit for a bonfire. And so we are going to let the Columbus Division of Fire determine tomorrow whether that date will hold or not. If the Columbus Division of Fire says no, and we have to argue it a bit longer, then it will have to be a different day because it has to be filed 10 days before the event, 10 business days before the event. So if that means tomorrow, I have to go downtown or someplace to talk to the people and hand in this application and pay them the money. If that works and we get permission, then it's like go time. So if anybody is interested in volunteering in any way, shape, or form, I know you got lots of things to sign up for on our volunteer board, but I'm going to have y'all put your name here and your email address right clearly. Write very clearly if you would like to help in any capacity for this thing that could happen 2 weeks from today. I love being involved in Tibetan Buddhism. They are a bit spontaneous. So if anybody has an interest, you can come and sign up for that. It will probably be an all-hands-on-deck situation because we're going to need a tent. And we're going to need, yes, a floor, because we can't, like, dig up the ground to make it level. We can't, like, grade it, because that's what we're blessing the land, so that we can open it and disturb it. So we're going to have to, like, go to a rental place and say, could we, like, rent a wedding tent? We could put about 20 people in, and a good dance floor, please. Could we have, like, a dance floor? And yeah, it's going to be uneven. Can you like make it even? So anyhow, we have to do all of this and get a fire pit and the whole thing and try to stay out of the way of authorities in the next 2 weeks and get everything that we need and places for people to stay, because it'll be Kenpo Tenkyong, Lama Karma, Lama Karma's wife Cherry, and one of the lamas from Long Island, Lama Sonam. So she's coming as well. So there'll be 3 lamas, 1 attendant, and lots of stuff, because there's a lot of stuff that goes into this bonfire. Everything has symbolic meaning. You burn grain as a way of like purifying one type of difficulty. You burn black sesame seed in order to overcome another kind of difficulty. And you burn juniper in order to make a pleasing smoke of like incense. I'm hoping the neighbors don't get too upset. So we have to call them as well. Oh, by the way. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can put on a traditional Tibetan bonfire in Franklinton on a Sunday morning. We're going to give this a shot. So if you have the opportunity to sign and to let us know that you're interested in volunteering, we will start probably setting things up early in the morning, and we'll go until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There, I believe we will have regular programs here for the introduction to Buddhism class and the introduction to meditation, because there will be members of the public who have no idea what's going on and are just going to show up because their teacher said, show up and write a report about going to a Buddhist center, and we want to be there to help them too. So we will probably have something here, even if there is a ceremony. And there, you know, we'll do our best. So thank you. So we'll dedicate the merit. So that was the news. You can stay behind if you have more questions. We dedicate the merit from this session to all sentient beings. May all sentient beings find ways to believe in their Buddha nature and to begin to uncover it through the practice of meditation. And may they engender compassion for themselves and all beings without measure. I'll recite a short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of awakening. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May we free all beings. Okay, thank you. Thank you. And thanks to the sound people.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.